So there you go, Bill Flores. You got another champion here in your congressional district with the
Boston
Bombers.
Well, I saw that, sir. Congratulations to the Brazos Valley Bombers.
Yeah, that's kind of nice. You've just finished up, I guess, your town hall meetings. Tell me what the people beyond Brazos County are thinking about as far as the concerns in Washington.
Bill, let me say first, we did a little bit different format this year. Mm-hmm. We had teletown halls for our big communities, Bryan College Station, Waco, and Austin, Pflugerville. And then we had our physical town halls actually in our smaller communities. So this week we went to Mahia, Grossbeck, Fairfield, Caldwell, Cameron, and also did an employee town hall at the Big Brown Power Plant up in Freestone County. And the two big issues on everybody's minds are presidential overreach and the border crisis. And I got an earful about, you know, frustration from, just everyday Texans on what's going on in Washington about these issues.
You know, the border crisis, it's interesting because Henry Cuellar has been pretty vocal. Again, he's a Democrat, but he's got a border district. He's lived with it for a long, long time, and I imagine his leadership over on the Democrat side is not necessarily happy with it. But again, this is an everyday occurrence for a lot of Texans.
It is, and Henry's pretty frustrated with the way that the leadership of his side of the aisle and the way that the White House has failed to deal with this, including the Senate. I mean, the only body that's passed any type of reasonable legislation to deal with this has been the House.
Now, as you come back, it's not going away. It may go off the front pages. It's not going away. But what do you see happening as far as immigration is concerned when you all get back together?
Well, here's the next thing that's going to happen. School's opening up in a few weeks. And earlier this year, when this crisis broke out and all these unaccompanied minors were being shipped around the country, the leadership of the states, the governors, were told by the president and the administration that local school districts didn't have to worry about educating these children. In the last couple of weeks, they have started sending notices out saying you can expect to have this many children in this community show up in your schoolhouse. Mm. And so it's going to be a shock to a lot of local communities. And what I think will happen, I mean, people are still upset about this. Real world Americans are still upset. And when they see this happen to the local school systems, I think the temperature is going to go up. And what my hope is that we can get the Senate to go back into session and to look at the House bill and try to pass what we passed and try to start getting this thing patched up.
Well, and this is just not your typical kid who may be transferred from another county or another state. You've got communication language problems that have to be addressed on the very first day.
That's exactly right, and that has that's got local folks pretty upset. Governor Jindal of Louisiana and I are working together on some energy initiatives, and he and I had a conversation Friday before last, and he was saying that his school districts are reporting back to him that there are going to be 2,000 of these children in various school systems in Louisiana. He said, we don't have the room or the teachers for them, and so he's pretty stirred up about it.
Let's turn our attention, okay, then presidential outreach, presidential overreach. Tell me again what they're wanting you to do as far as action when it comes to that.
Well, I think there's just frustration. They're looking to Congress to come up with something to do, and I walked through sort of what the three options are. Option number one is to do nothing, which is not a good option. I said, you know, we're not doing nothing. We have over 25 oversight hearings a week to try to deal with the issues coming out of the executive branch. Option number two is to look at impeachment, but then I try to walk people back from that cliff saying it really doesn't work in the current environment you have in Washington. So then I walk them through the reason that the House of Representatives is going to sue the president to try to enforce the law the way it's written. And, and I walk through the pros and cons of that, but I also explain that the Constitution is a pretty good document, but I don't think the framers of the Constitution ever envisioned you'd have a situation like this where you'd have a what you call a lawless administration in a Congress, meaning the Senate in this case, that wouldn't stand up for its own powers under the Constitution. So it's pretty frustrating. But I sort of walk them through what those options are and tell them what we can practically do and not do to deal with it.
Bill Flores joining us this morning from in the district. Before Congress left, put a patch on the Highway Trust Fund. Texas has more roads than any other state in America. What does that mean short term, and what can Texans expect to have to do to solve transportation problems in the near future?
Well, what it means in the short term is that we have filled the gap in the funding shortfall of the Highway Trust Fund, and because that's been done, you won't have any stoppage of construction projects. That the project, those projects will continue to go without interruption. And so that's the good news. I think it would have been horrible from a policy standpoint and a political standpoint to suddenly have about 6,000 projects around the country get the plug pulled, and you can sit there and watch a half-built bridge as you're commuting to work every day. I think that would have been pretty bad. So that short-term problem is off the table. Longer-term, we still have a broken trust fund, and we've got to come up with a way to deal with this. In my view, what we ought to do is we ought to turn the entire highway transportation system back over to the states and let them deal with it. It's closer to home. They can build these roads more efficiently than doing it with a bunch of federal regulations or a bunch of federal oversight. And I think that all Americans would be better off and have better roads and built more quickly for lower cost if we can let Texas do it rather than have the federal government involved.
Well, been a while since I've met an elected official who wants to vote for a tax increase, but what you're saying then is that onus is going to be on state legislators.
It will be, but what they'll be able to say is, look, the 18-cent federal gasoline tax is going to go to zero or something small, like let's say 1 cent, so that you get a little bit of a federal guidance, but not control. But then leave it to the states, and the states are laboratories for innovation. And the state of Texas may come up with a totally different way to finance roads instead of using the gasoline tax. And if they do that, then I think we need to get away from the gasoline tax, because the gasoline tax leaves too many people not paying for the roads that they're driving on today.
Sure. Well, and I guess when it started, the user fees made sense, but now that's not so much, and y'all are having to take money kind of out of a general fund. And now, one of the ways you're doing that is something called pension smoothing. And I guess as I understand it, what Congress said to companies who have to fund pension funds is you have to pay that right now, and you can have higher profits, but that's going to mean you'll pay more in corporate tax, so that means that tax money helped to build this patch for the highway pension highway trust fund. But what it also means now is that years later, companies are going to have to be paying into the pension fund to not only what they should be paying, but also contributions to fill the hole because they're not having to pay that now. Doesn't that kind of end up being a recipe for problems for corporate America?
It could be. And you correctly explained what happens in pension smoothing. I mean, you hit the nail on the head with that. And it is, I don't like it. It's a gimmicky way to try to pay for something totally unrelated, and that's highway construction. But we had to get the highway deal off the table so that we can find a longer-term solution for that. Under the pension smoothing, though, you could have to the extent companies take advantage of this and they don't pay attention to their pension obligations, they could wind up in a situation where you have pension shortfalls later on down the road in the future, 20 or 30 years from now. And some companies have not paid particular attention to their pensions. We've had pensions go belly up. And when that happens, we've got the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation winds up stepping in and letting the taxpayers bail out those companies. So it is a problem, and I'm hoping that not too many companies actually take advantage of that, and I don't think many will. It'll typically be only the companies that are having some sort of a current financial issue that take advantage of the pension smoothing.
Well, what bothers me is when a corporation can't plan or doesn't plan for the future, look at GM. I mean, that was part of their problem. They ended up
exactly.
having a whole bunch of folks, and they didn't take care of them, and we ended
exactly.
up paying for them.
You're exactly right.
Let's turn to Iraq for a minute for our final chat. I'd like to get your thoughts on where the support is and where the support isn't for the Obama administration's action in northern Iraq.
Well, I think for the most part that Congress, on a bipartisan basis, has been trying to encourage the president to get involved early to put up some offensive kinetic resources against ISIL, if you will. And I don't know why the president took 2 months, but he wasn't going to get any pushback from Republicans and from most Democrats in terms of trying to put up some intelligence resources, try to help the Kurds with arms, trying to put up some air assets to try to go kinetic against these folks. And he waited 2 months to do it. The only thing that got him off the dime on that was when we started having massacres of Christians in sort of north central Iraq, and that's when he started to pay attention to this. It's a shame that he didn't do it earlier, because we've already seen some positive impact from just a little bit of investment of American assets, and that is by arming the Kurds and by providing the folks in northern Iraq some air cover. We've been able to turn the tide on ISIL. Now, how long this will last, I don't know, but most of the folks that I've talked to in the last few days just think that the president's foreign policy has been a disaster. It's not even really a foreign policy at all. And they think, and the last thing they want to see is they want to see people have undergoing religious persecution from ISIL in Iraq. So I think he's done the right thing. Now, he did say something stupid earlier this week, and that is that he didn't pull the troops out of Iraq that Bush did.
Mm.
You know, but all you have to do is go back a couple of years and listen to him say, well, I wound up the war in Iraq, and now Al-Qaeda's on the run. He has trouble remembering his recent history.
Mm. Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear the entire interview archived on the website at WTAW.com. Thanks for the time this morning.
Great talk to you, Scott. I'd ask our listeners to continue praying for our country, our military men and women, and our first responders.
Sure. Thanks a lot.